Welcome to the Grace-Based Families Podcast. Understanding how God's grace can transform your relationships is a game changer. We hope today's episode can do just that. We're excited for you to listen in on the conversation. So we're here today with Tim Kimmel. He's a well-known author and speaker and founder of Grace-Based Families. And Tim and his wife, Darcy, have four kids, and they've been married for 50 years. And we figured out recently that only 5% of people make it to the 50-year, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
50
5% years. A chance of making it to your 50th wedding anniversary. And that's when I say that, when we say that, it doesn't mean that, the Kimmels deserve to be applauded or something like that. You know, for some people, they didn't make it because one of them died, you know, and that happens there. And then I have known people who, couples who have made their 50th anniversary, and it was merely a technicality because they hadn't been in love for 47 years, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so they were just roommates, mm-hmm. Trying to raise their kids some. So, but at the same time, if you have been deliberate about it, and you've been trying to write a love story the whole time, mm-hmm. it's kind of nice to be able to look back and say, even in the rough times.
Right. And that's probably when
this was a good ride. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't take long for couples to realize that the honeymoon doesn't last long.
No.
We've talked to people that are like, I woke up the day after my wedding and was like, what did I do? Why did I marry this person?
Mm-hmm.
And so today we thought we would kind of press in with some questions that people have written in. And you have 40 plus years of experience of talking with couples. We've heard it all. You have some of the things that you have heard, I'm sure our listeners couldn't even imagine. So we're going to just start scratching the surface. And as we unpack this, if you have some questions that Tim can weigh in on in the future, we'll tell you how to send in those questions. But let's start off with, someone wrote in and said, before we got married, we had a lot in common, but now we seem so different. What do we do?
Well, first of all, get in line with a lot of married couples, maybe even most. And there's a reason why I think before we get married, we have so much in common. And that's because before we get married, both hearts are trying to win the favor of the other person. And so by nature, when you're outwardly focused like that and you're desiring the other person's best interest, you're suddenly interested in what the other person's interested in. That's just normal. And then you get married and you find out, I really wasn't interested in that at all. I'll give you an example. Before we got married, Darcy loved football. Loved it. She would sit next to me, watch game after game. She figured out players' names. She figured out defenses with me, and she would call off a defense on. She figured out that the numbers on their jersey correspond to their position on the field.
Wow.
See, most
I didn't know that. That's
most
impressive.
Women don't know that, but here's the thing. Most men don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you played the game, you don't realize that's how the officials can tell if you're an eligible receiver.
Hmm.
They look at your number. Well, and if she ever got up, she never walked between me and a television set or turned on a noisy appliance like a vacuum cleaner or something when I'm trying to watch the game. And I thought, this is going to be something. I'm going to marry this girl. We're going to watch a lot of the game. Before we got married, she used to make some of her own clothes. And I actually enjoyed her. Well, she would lay out the pattern on the fabric, and I would get down and very meticulously and carefully get the pin cushion and pin this all down and then carefully cut it out for her, stack it up for her. Put it together. I loved doing that for her before we got married. And then we got married, and the game came on. And I said, hey, Darcy, sit down and watch the game. And she gives me a, why? What do you mean, why? You love football. When did I give you the impression I love football? And same thing she's cutting something. Can you pin this down and cut it up? Well, I'm capable. I'm not crazy about that. But I thought you enjoyed doing it. When did I give you that impression? Okay. So some people listening and say, okay, I got Tim and Darcy's number. They deliberately deceived each other to get the other person to marry him. And the fact, no, we did not. Before we got married, she liked to watch football. I liked to help her cut junk out. And then we got married, and something unique happened to us that happens to everybody. We changed. It happens to everybody. Okay, you get married and you move away from your family often. That's change. You start your careers. That's change. You start making more money collectively than you ever saw in your life. That changed. You start having kids. That changes your looks. All these things change you. And so what makes a great marriage is not that you have so much in common, that you're adjusting, that you're committed to adjusting to the changes that we're all going through as we live our lives. And that willingness to adjust, I think, is summarized in this wonderful word from the Bible called grace. Because grace, we've defined it, you've defined it on your podcast so many times, as giving somebody something they desperately need but don't necessarily deserve. I don't deserve for my wife to sit down and watch what I want. We do these things because we care, we love. And we also acknowledge that, hey, this isn't their cup of tea, so what? Some dear friends of ours, he's really into hunting. She wants nothing to do with it. She doesn't want to sit in a duck blind. She doesn't want to do any of that stuff. But she did it before they got married. But after that, no, I don't want anything to do with it. Okay, no problem. We're all different people. But I think it's when we are looking inward and wanting our spouse to jump through our hoops and have our taste buds and like our kind of music and have our view of life, that's when we get in trouble. Because you didn't marry a clone of yourself. You married an individual. And by the way, I think one of the worst marriages you could have is if you married a clone of yourself. I wanted to find somebody that was a good partner for me. And remember the Rocky One, he fell in love with Adrian. Mm-hmm. And Adrian's brother, Polly, he thought she was just this mousy, homely girl. Couldn't understand why Rocky fell in love with her. And Rocky explains, she says, Adrian's got gaps and I've got gaps. And together, mm-hmm. no gaps. And so these differences fill in the blanks for each other.
Yeah.
Does this make any sense
to
you?
Yeah, absolutely. And this ties in a lot with our whole concept here of freedom to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And I love what you said. You don't want to marry a clone of each other. My husband and I are very different. I want to go on a hike. And he's like, ugh, that sounds awful. So it's okay to have your individual interests. And I think you can celebrate that. That's what I hear you saying. Like, if my husband wants to go to an EDM electronic dance music concert, I think it's a little too ravey and techno-y. But I can go and support that. That doesn't have to be something that I love. He can be different. And he can like that now, and he didn't like it when we first were dating. Or, you know, and he used to hike with me.
But you're also talking about one of the steps of, I think, grace, and that's a willingness to meet the person in the middle mm-hmm. on some things that isn't your cup of tea. So mm-hmm. you'll go to the concert with him because you love him.
Right.
Not because you love that music.
Yeah.
You know, parents do this, or should do this, all the time with their kids. I did not look forward to having a tea party inside a kid's playhouse that was like climbing inside a doghouse. In fact, I built my daughter's playhouse, our two daughters, and I made sure that it was tall enough that I could stand up in it instead of be hunched over. Mm-hmm. But I did go to those tea parties. Because I love them. Really, the solution to this question, Michelle, has more to do with our commitment to our spouse than our personal taste or mm-hmm. our wants. And so when we're constantly zeroing in on what irritates you so much about your spouse, where they seem to fall short, where they just don't, I wish we had more in common. You're looking at yourself and not the big picture. But I think we could all testify how easy it is to do that. I sure have done that with Darcy.
Mm-hmm.
She's done it with me.
Yeah.
You've never done it with Mike, but you know, I'm, you know sure. what I mean. It's just, you know, I think this comes back to how we define love.
Right.
Once you define love.
The commitment of my will to your needs and best interest, regardless of the cost to
me. There you go. And so if we start with that kind of love, then the fact that we're kind of growing very differently and going different directions should not bother us so much.
But you do talk about, you're not saying grow separate. You're saying have your own interests, have things that you're different, but also have that heart connection and find some common ground.
Yeah, absolutely. But if we're using a checklist that's arbitrary and personal, we're probably going to be disappointed. The heart connection commitments have to do with love and devotion and faithfulness and loyalty and kindness and mercy and forgiveness. I didn't mention country music in any of that list, although I do think that's a nice thing for a wife to like.
Yeah. But I really like how you're saying people can have their own interests. And I think the comparison game comes in here. It's easy to look at other couples and go, oh, well, they do tennis together. Why don't we do that together? Or this couple loves to, whatever, go skiing. Why don't we ski? Well, you know what? I hate skiing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be cold. That is a miserable sport in my mind. But if Mike wants to go ski, great. I'll cheer you on and drink hot cocoa from the lodge.
Right?
Like, you can do your thing. We can find shared activities. But I think we have to be careful with this one, too, with comparing ourselves to other couples, or what you said, this arbitrary checklist of what it looks like to have a quote unquote good marriage.
Yeah. Well, I think comparison is the poison pill of this culture. We're just bombarded with so many images of somebody else and their idealistic thing. And especially if you're using the standard, social media outlets, most of those are illusions. Mm-hmm. I mean, people listening to us right now, if you have a Facebook account, let's go to the oldest one out there, right? The most common one, what's
Instagram?
Yeah, Instagram. There you go. If you're not filtering those pictures or sharpening those pictures or being very careful that how you present it, then you're not paying attention. But guess what? The second you touch that picture and make it better than it was when it was taken, you've created an illusion. Maybe not that far off of reality, but the fact is you don't go by this. These happy-looking couples, we have those happy-looking couples come to our office, and they cry a lot.
Yeah.
Because, hey, that's the story of everybody's marriage along the way. We all have things that can get the best of us.
Yeah. Let's talk about the comparison pill a little bit, leading into our second question.
The poison pill.
Oh, what did I say? Poison pill of comparison.
I mean, that's what I like to call it, because I do think it really does bring a sickness to the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, how? A question that someone asked here is, there's just a lot of pressure to maintain a wealthy status, or at least the image of, oh, we're going here on spring break. These are the kind of, outings that me and my husband do. What can we do if we can't afford to do this, or if we can afford, but it just doesn't feel right to maintain this kind of lifestyle?
Yeah, I'll tell you, you're hitting on something right there that, very close to God's heart. Very close. Who is the richest? Think about this. If we're just doing the math, who is the richest person that ever walked on the face of the earth? Jesus.
I was like, Solomon? Okay, Jesus.
There you go. It was Jesus. Because he's the creator of everything. He's the God of the universe. I don't care who the king is sitting on a throne, he's the king of that king. But he did not flaunt his wealth and his power. And he was also the smartest person to ever walk on the face of the earth, because he could just think things into existence. But he didn't flaunt that. And I think when we have to do things deliberately to try to impress people. That I think that that's why people go to counseling. Mm-hmm. That's why people have to read the Bible a lot and get on their knees, because that shows a huge flaw in our makeup. The in fact, if I were to pin down three things that I think right now would be considered assets in our typical life, but could turn around and become the very thing that undermines our effectiveness, our joy, and our relationship with God, I would say it is intelligence, muscle strength, mm-hmm. and wealth. Hmm. Now, there's nothing wrong with any of those.
Right.
And I'm sitting here visiting with a girl that, you know, you rank high in all three of those areas.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you do. And you've done well in life, and you're an athlete, and you're very smart. There's nothing wrong with any of these things. Unless we need those to be understood by everybody that we come in contact with. What I think that those things do is create a self-sufficiency in us. You know, I'm smart, I'm tough, and I got some money depth, right? So I'm really something, and I'm self-sufficient. Well, that, by the way, I want to make sure people listening hear what I'm saying. There's nothing wrong with these things until you take it to that level.
So you're saying there's nothing wrong with success, being successful in a right. sport or having a strong bank account. It's a problem when you're using that or wanting that success to fulfill you.
Right. And you need other people to acknowledge this in you. And here's why self-sufficiency is something our Western culture worships. But we don't realize that it's one of the main tools that the forces of darkness can use to block us from our relationship with God. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, Jesus actually weighed in on this. He said it's very hard for these kind of people to get into heaven. Mm-hmm. And it's not because God has a problem with smart, strong, wealthy people. It's that they have a problem with him. And that problem is they don't need him. Mm-hmm. They don't need him. And so if I am really concerned about keeping up with, you know, impressing my neighbors and all that stuff, that shows that I'm not gaining my sources from the Lord. And somehow I need that affirmation back. Actually, I think the person that wrote this question probably has got their head together.
Right.
Because they see this, they see the pressure on it, and they don't want to surrender to it. Mm-hmm. Here's a verse for you. Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 23 and 24. Thus says the Lord, see if these three things here sound familiar. Let not the wise man boast in his wisdom. Let not the mighty man boast in his strength. Let not the rich man boast in his riches. Now, when you think the word boast, that's saying, I'm taking credit for some things, and I want you to know about these. You need to know I'm tougher than you. I'm smarter than you. I have more money than you, mm-hmm. or the average person out there. He says, no, don't do that. He says, look, if you're going to boast in anything, boast in this, that you understand and know me, that I am the Lord, look at this, who practices steadfast love, justice, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, declares the Lord. So rather than try and impress everybody with, you know, how smart we are, how rich we are, how tough we are, and strong we are, why don't we just have a steadfast love for these people around us that stand for justice and the right things on earth. And that there, I think, will give us a kind of reputation from just about anybody that says, I want to be closer to this person.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I've answered this well, because I think, Michelle, that it's not just a problem of the upper class. It's not just a problem of the middle class. It's a problem of any class. Mm-hmm. I remember talking with a missionary, and they worked in a third world type of country, and I was asking, what do you think is the biggest problem you're contending with? And he said it was comparison. And trying to upstage the person next to you. This one has a thatch roof and he has a tin roof and whatever. Hmm. And it's part of our human flaw system.
Yeah. But I love how you're saying, keep it in check. Mm-hmm. Don't believe the success lie, right? We're not striving after money, power, beauty, fame for ourselves. And we're hopefully instilling that in our kids, that we want to have a heart that serves others, that's generous, that's humble, and that's grateful.
Yeah, it's a success illusion that surrounds us. And if these things are the things that we really want to make sure people think of us, there's going to come a day, I don't care who the person is, where those things are stripped away from them. Mm-hmm. And it might be just the last moments of their life when they realize these three things can't do a thing for changing what's going to happen next, which is my eyes are going to close and they're not going to open.
Yeah.
And that's when you better be glad. Well, it doesn't matter, because that was not where my wealth was or my knowledge was, my hope was. It was it's in the Lord Jesus, and I trust Him.
Yeah.
I get through on this.
That's
yeah, you're hitting on that whole concept of greatness from the biblical point of view is not measured the way our world does it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's totally upside down. Let's change gears a little bit here. Let's talk about fighting. This is a huge thing in marriage, right? So someone asked, when my husband and I fight, it gets ugly. How do we change this pattern?
Mm-hmm. All couples fight. It's, and if a couple never fights, I would have a concern about their relationship. Mm-hmm. Just because I'd think, okay, somebody married a clone of themselves. Mm-hmm. Somebody ego is living out in somebody else. That is not a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. But we need to fight right and fight fair. Mm-hmm. We need to fight graciously. So let's talk about some of the things. What would you say some of the things when people aren't fighting fair? What are some of the things that stand out about those kind of fights?
Raising your voice.
Okay, let's talk about volume.
Mm-hmm.
Volume, screaming at somebody is a form of toxic high control, and it is very effective. Mm-hmm. We're in a studio right now. If I suddenly stood up, Michelle, and I leaned down and got about a couple inches from your face, and I'm screaming at you, that would really frighten the heck out of you. And if you did it to me, I would clearly be paying attention and not liking the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's only three reasons why you should ever raise your voice. One is somebody is far away and you're trying to get a message to them, but they can't hear you in a normal voice. Secondly is you're cheering somebody on. That helps the adrenaline and sports events, things like that. And then the other is when you're warning them of danger. Those are three legitimate times to use it. Otherwise, it's a form of control. And let me define control, high control. I like to define it as when I leverage the strength of my personality or my position against your weaknesses in order to get you to meet my selfish agenda. That's high control. Nobody likes to be on the receiving end of that. And yet many marriages, many individuals within marriage feel I'm looking down the barrel of that gun all the time. Mm-hmm. We have a book on that called The High Cost of High Control, where we not only unpack the ways we, the aggressive control and passive control and the combination of the two, but the reasons, the core reasons why we tend to control, and then how grace comes to the rescue. Mm-hmm. It might be one they want to check out. But here's the other thing. What are some of the other things besides volume?
I call it a kitchen sink fight, where you throw everything in but the kitchen sink. So it started up talking about one issue.
Right.
And then it turns into a million different issues.
Yeah. And that's going to get you nowhere. Mm-hmm. And usually when that's happening, you're not trying to resolve the problem. You're just trying to win the problem, win the fight. Mm-hmm. And so if they've got a good one, then you got to come up with something else, whatever. So a couple rules of a fair fight is you deal with one issue, not many, if you're truly trying to resolve it. Mm-hmm. One issue, not many. And I think it comes... it comes down to what do you ultimately, what is your goal of a fight? Because when couples fight and it gets really ugly, what is their goal, do you think?
To win.
That's
my goal.
Yeah.
I fight to win.
To win, exactly.
I'm not a good example. No. I'm always like, can you just admit that 90% of the time I'm right? Yeah. That was our this weekend discussion. Yeah. And then we negotiated. No, it's like 80% mindset. Okay, fine. But yes, you fight to win.
You fight to win. And that's part of our instinct and sort of our sense of self-protection. I think our ego needs to know we're right. And many times we're convinced we're right. And they're wrong. But if you're dealing with somebody you love, and you want this love story to actually thrive, you're better off, rather than coming into an argument with the goal of winning it, you come into the argument with the goal of finding unity before this thing's over. And here's a practical reason why I think, let's just talk for the women for now, why you don't want to win all these fights with your husband. Do you know what I'm going to say?
I think so.
Yeah, because you end up sleeping with a loser every night.
No one wants that.
Well, it's just that if a person continues to be the loser because the other person is just so dominant, will not stop until you surrender, mm-hmm. and all, they can actually start thinking they're one. And then they can start acting like one. No, you want unity, not victory. Mm-hmm. But I think going in, once again, this is what's the perspective I'm talking about? It's a gracious attitude, mm-hmm. towards the other person. And then I think it's an honest attitude towards yourself that I need this too much.
Yeah.
One of the things that we have found in when it comes to fighting fair is that it's not uncommon for one to be fighting the facts of the problem and the other fighting the feelings. Mm-hmm. And so they're both convinced they're right and they're both convinced the other person is wrong. We've had this type of conflict a lot in our marriage where one's fighting the facts. And we've found, we have this little signal, a little timeout saying, okay, hold it, timeout. We're getting nowhere. Let's separate the facts from the feelings here. Mm-hmm. Let's separate them and let's deal with them individually. So we always take the facts first because they're the easiest ones to call. You either said it or you didn't say it. You did it or you didn't do it. You were there or you weren't there, whatever. Mm-hmm. You promised this, you either delivered or didn't deliver. You get that out of the way. And on that one, you may not owe an apology. But then you come to the feelings, and that's how you handled what you're dealing with. You might owe a huge one. Mm-hmm. But once again, grace, one of the things I think about gracious people is they own their mistakes.
Right. That's what I was going to say is we all fight ugly at times.
Mm-hmm.
We say hurtful things. We attack their character, not their behavior, whatever it may be.
Correct.
We catch someone off guard, or for me, I'm quick. So I'm just like, going, I'm attack, tack, 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 tack. And my husband's like waving the white flag. And I'm like, no, we're going to solve this now, right? Like, you want to step? And it gets intense. And then he's like, we need some space. And then we'll come back. And then I just have to freaking humble myself and say, yeah, I'm sorry. And I hate saying I'm sorry because mm-hmm. I'm prideful in that area.
Right.
But it is so huge when you can own it,
right,
and apologize for whatever piece you played, mm-hmm. in messing up how you fought.
Well, you know the term eating crow? Mm-hmm. Is that, I don't know the people listening. When I was growing up, but when it talked about eating crow, it means having to swallow your pride and admit mm-hmm. you were wrong. Mm-hmm. I could write a cookbook on different recipes for how to eat crow. I mean, I have had to eat it in so many different ways. But here's one thing I found out about eating crow. It doesn't leave a bitter aftertaste. Hmm. Although it's a tough one on the way down. It resolves things so fast. And what is it? What requires the bigger person? Admitting, owning your junk, and asking for forgiveness, or just consistently winning? Well, the world would say, oh, the winner mm-hmm. takes the spoil. Not in this situation. Mm-hmm. Not if you ruin your love story.
Yeah. So. That's very wise. And we have a ton of resources on how to fight fear on our website, too. I just wanted to mention that. Last question here. You keep talking about love story, mm-hmm. right?
And
you
and
that's a good thing. I think that's a great litmus test because you can, I've heard you say, you can write a roommate story or at least we didn't get divorced story.
Right.
But
you meant to say roommate story, right?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Did I say
that?
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like romance story.
Oh, roommate. Yes.
Roommate story.
Yeah.
But occasional benefits, you know, yeah.
You just get in your own separate, you know, rat race. But how can we continue to make, this sounds cheesy, but Valentine's Day lasts throughout the year. How can you continue to write that love story year after year, knowing there's going to be mm-hmm. some good seasons, some hard seasons? What are some practical ways that couples can?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, we have a day in the calendar where you're supposed to, definitely tell your spouse mm-hmm. or your whoever you're attracted to that you care for them and love them and demonstrate that and all. That breaks my heart many times when I see it. And what breaks my heart is how many people are living for that day in February mm. when they'll finally hear their spouse say, you know, I love you, or here's a nice card, or here's a, you know, let's go out to dinner, or they might finally have sex or something. And I think, how sad mm-hmm. that they live for this. Because what I would challenge anybody listening to me is if February, what is it, 14th?
Yeah.
If February 14th were just another day now and Valentine's was taken off of the table, would your spouse still know they're thoroughly and deeply loved by you and adored by you? Mm-hmm. Because, see, it shouldn't require a day in the year, every year, to be reminded of that. And so I think one of the ways is that I use my words and my actions to consistently appeal to my spouse's three driving inner needs. And what do they need? They need to know they're secure. I use words and actions that give them a sense of a secure love. They need to know they're significant. I voice a significant purpose in their life. You know, you notice the things they get right. You applaud them. You encourage them. You thank them. So, you know, I was talking with a guy just yesterday, and he and his marriage were struggling some, and I was saying, well, you know, she just needs to hear from you. You're so grateful that it was her that you married. You're so grateful that it's her you wake up next to. You're so grateful that it was her you got to have these kids with and take on life with. And I was just rattling some things off the top mm-hmm. of my head. And when I got done, he said, I've never said anything like that to her. What, wow. What was I thinking? How could I have missed something like that? Mm. Now, that's not because Tim Kimmel's really good at this. This is because God is really good at this. Mm-hmm. And that's what he does. When we read his word, he does those kind of things. He says those kind of things to us through mm-hmm. his word all the time. Okay. Well, all grace is treating your spouse the way God treats you. Mm-hmm. And so that should be the. And then the third thing I think is building strength into your spouse and with words and actions that build a sense of hope for them.
Yeah. One thing I'll always remember this. You said, so, what do you have planned for your family? this summer or whatever. I'm like, oh, we're going to take this trip. And you said, but what do you and Mike have on the calendar for just you two? And you drew like a clock. This is how I visualize it. And you said, you need to have some scheduled anticipated couple time. And that may not be going on an actual trip. That just may be sending the kids to a friend's house for 8 hours and having a day date at home and going to Trader Joe's and grabbing a sandwich.
Yeah.
But having those times set aside for just the couples. Can you talk about the importance of that?
Yeah, you know, when we were young and didn't have the money to get away or to hire the babysitters, but we had kids that demanded a lot of time, we had another couple whose kids were about the same age. And a couple of times a year, their kids would come and stay at our, they'd come over to our house on a Friday night and we'd drop them off at church on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. They'd have a Friday night and all day Saturday and Saturday evening just to be two people that are in love with each other,
yeah.
a married couple. And they might do busy work around a house. They might run air. They might do nothing,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's just that. And then they would take our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And but you got to put those things on there because you can, if you don't get deliberate about this, time will come along and get deliberate with you and say, I'm going to steal all that opportunity out of you. And then that's how couples get out there 20 years, they've raised their kids, and they look at each other and say, who the heck are you?
Yeah. We have some friends, and we ask them, so when's the last time you guys went on a trip? And they said, it's been 15 years since our honeymoon. And they have a bunch of little kids, and we're like, we'll watch your kids overnight. You need to just go home together.
Because that's right.
A couple weeks ago, we had one of those days where we had no kids, and the in-laws had them for the day. I watched my husband trim a bougainvillea. I just sat outside with some iced tea and he just trimmed a and I'm like, oh, this is so nice.
Yeah.
And because no one was bothering us, we just chit chatted. And so everyone's like, what did you guys do? Did you do anything like really cool? I'm like, Mike trimmed the trees. I sat outside. Then I watched him skim the pool. We just talked. We had a glass of wine. Like, it was so nice. I'm like, I remember why I love you.
right.
Or not distracted and only talking about logistics. So it's really important to find those little pockets of time.
Right.
Even in the thick of raising little ones. So, well, thank you, Tim. And we just wanted to reiterate that we want to be here for you guys. And after 40 years of working with couples, Tim has heard it all. Probably. And we've also seen thousands of couples who have gone from a really disappointing and hard part place in their marriage to a thriving partnership because they've let God's grace fill in those gaps. So if you have questions, we're going to start this periodic Q&A with Dr. Tim Kimmel. So you can email your questions at family@gracebasedfamilies.com. And we are here and no question is off limits.
There you go.
Thanks for listening. Thanks, Tim.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Grace Based Families podcast, which is part of Grace Based Families Ministries.
For more resources, check us out at gracebasedfamilies.com.
And don't forget to follow us at Grace Based Families on Instagram and Facebook.
Until next time.